and welcome into episode 51 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you Italian football fans from all over the world. So episode 50 was mostly about Roma. Episode 51 will be all about Inter, the only remaining Italian club still playing in Europe at this point. I am Alex Dono. Before we introduce our special guest for this one, let me introduce my co-host, Jerry Mancini, everyone's lovable Laziale. Now, Jerry, I don't know if you're a little bit concerned, man, but a couple days ago, I thought the deal was 100% done between Lazio and David Silva, with Silva coming in as a free transfer. And I start to see some reports today. I saw this on Football Italia, and they're sourcing Gazzetta, Corriere, Sport Media said, and others that say that apparently Lazio is trying to get a hold of David Silva to sign and finalize the deal. And they can't get a hold of him. They're worried that Juventus or someone else is coming in to hijack the deal. What's going on with Lotito, Jerry? Can you confirm this?
I don't buy it. I don't buy it for 2 minutes. I find it's just the fact that they haven't heard anything for two days now. The fact that it's just clickbait information. Like it's just shameless reporting. That's my opinion on it. How do these guys know that they haven't received a call? I'd really like to know where they get their information from, because do they know who doesn't contact me for 2 days? Because if they do know, I need to know how, because I don't buy it for 2 seconds. The fact that he's still playing with Man City, I think a lot of people have to remember that. He still has a season going on, and I'm pretty sure that the last thing he's worried about is signing a new contract at the moment. And he wants to win Champions League, and he has a game tomorrow against Lyon. So you tell me, what's his bigger priority at the moment? So I think there's a lot of factors that people need to weigh in as to why he hasn't signed the contract yet, or why maybe he hasn't been in contact, or whatever it may be. But for me, I think that Lazio will push to the end to make sure that he will become a part of this team. He's being offered a good contract with a lot of bonuses, a lot of incentives. I don't buy it. I think the reports are just so vague and don't have enough information to make me a believer. That's just the way I look at it.
And also, like, now that, you know, Juventus has their little revolution going after appointing Pirlo, and so everyone's wondering, oh, what are their transfer targets going to be? And you know, Juventus has become like a really exciting club for the media to cover with all the changes going on. So any angle that they can get, like, and I'm backing you up on this, Jerry, that any angle these papers can get to talk about Juventus, if they think there might be any opening whatsoever for Juve to hijack the Silva deal, they're going to write about it and maybe make more out of it than there really is. But let's introduce our special guest for this episode. He's joined us before. In fact, I think when he was on with us last time around, set a record for downloads, and it might still be our top episode. I'll have to double check that. But this man brings the ratings, does a tremendous job with his YouTube channel, breaking down Inter and individual players, other clubs, does a fantastic job. Uncle Sharma is with us. Uncle, how you been, my friend?
What is good, guys? I'm very good. How are you guys? It's good to be back on after, I think, about 2 months ago, I think it was, it last came on.
Yeah, and it has been about 2 months. And you think about how much can change with a club like Inter over 2 months. I mean, I think it was even before the restart of Serie A when we talked to you last. So, yeah, you've had the second place finish since then. You've had this nice run that's developing in Europa League, and like usual with Inter, you've had a ton of drama, okay? So a couple weeks ago, Antonio Conte had his meltdown in the media after the Atalanta game, and that has led to a lot of speculation that there might be a parting of ways between Conte and Inter, that Conte may resign or he may be sacked. I don't find either of those things likely with how much money he's owed, or maybe they'll come to sort of a handshake settlement agreement for him to walk away. But since that happened, Sharma, it's only been positive for this club. I mean, they've had a couple of big victories in Europa League since then. They've been playing really well. Everyone in the club seems happy. So what do you make of it? Because there are still some Italian papers that are writing about Conte as if he could still resign and leave Inter before next season. Are you buying that? Like, do you think there's a legitimate chance that this Europa League run could be the last we see of Conte at Inter?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people say that outside of the Italian media as well, saying that Conte, you know, straight after the Europa League, whatever happens, wins or loses, he's leaving. But no, I'm in your camp. You know, I don't see it happening. I don't see him leaving money on the table. We know Conte; he doesn't leave no money on the table. We saw what he did at Chelsea. He sued them and won like 18 million, I think, in compensation. So he's not leaving any money on the table. And if we fire him or have a mutual agreement, it's going to be very expensive for us as a club because, you know, his contract is very hefty. I think it's like 11 million net. And I think the salary rises with every year of his contract. And there's still 2 years left on the contract. So that's going to be a lot of cash to give all at once. And we're still paying Luciano Spalletti out in Florence is making wine.
Yes,
So, yeah.
we're paying for his vineyard.
Yeah. So, no, I really don't see it happening. And I feel like it was like a premeditated move from Antonio Conte because the way he came out with it, it seemed like he already knew what he was saying. He seemed like he was targeting certain people in the on the board. And he was backing his players mainly. Like he wasn't like, you know, he was defending his players mostly. And it seems like it's brought the dressing room together. You know, I feel like the players are like, wow, you know, this guy's come out and defended us. And now we're gonna go out there and give everything to bring this trophy home.
You know, you
Hold
said
on.
something
Can I
there.
add
Oh,
something to that?
sorry to cut you off, Jerry. Go ahead.
Well, we always know that I have to shit talk a manager, and
No.
it's not gonna be Conte today. It's gonna be Maurizio Sarri because
Oh.
I see that Conte has grown a pair of balls. He's a man, and Sarri's a little bitch. That's what he is, a little bitch.
Came out firing today.
Who just got slapped around by Juve, got pushed around, didn't earn the respect of his players. Just I don't even with Chelsea, he didn't earn the respect of the players. And where is he now? Yes, I get it. I would love to be collecting 22 million pounds, 22 million dollars, pounds, whatever it is that right now, not even coaching. And who wouldn't, right? But at the end of the day, he got fired. Last year, he would have got fired by Chelsea. Somehow, he left with mutual respect. I don't know how he did that. But at the end of the day, the players don't want to play for him. And Sharma said a good point. He earned the respect of his team. He stood up for his players, and it really brought the club together. And it looks like they're playing even harder now. And that's something that I feel that Sarri still hasn't figured out, maybe. And maybe should take a chapter out of Conte's books.
That.
Conte is a man, and Sarri's just a little bitch. That's what he is.
Sharma, I wanted to ask you a follow-up because I agree with you that it sounded like what Conte said after the Atalanta match. It did sound calculated. So what do you think his goal was? Might it be as simple as, like, in his way, he thought this can bring the players together? Because clearly that has happened. I don't know if that was his direct intention or not. Could it be Conte wants something from management? Maybe he wants a certain someone within the organization sacked. Could it be he wants maybe a more direct line of communication with Zhang or a little bit more power? Like, what do you think the reason was for him to go off on that rant if we think it was calculated?
Well, I did say it's calculated, but I'm probably giving him too much credit because he is a bit of a petulant child at times. And as some people were pointing out, he was getting more and more angry as the interviews were going on after the Atalanta match. He started off angry and then he seemed to be just completely irate by the end of it. But I think the point, yeah, I think his point was mainly he said outright, they asked him if it was about the transfer market. He said it wasn't about the transfers, it was more about the media and how the club seems to kind of let the media take jabs at him and the players, which is true. And I think you know that, Alex, as a guy who follows Inter closely and, you know, on Twitter and things, and you see Inter players, and we talked about this last time, how, you know, Eriksen is getting attacked for just being here like for a few months. And then you have players like Bernardeschi, who has more tattoos than goals and or assists this season. You know, they just get a free pass. And you know, Conte had that scandal, like drama thing that was going on in the papers. That apparently he was getting death threats to his house, and he was angry that, you know, that got out. And you know, these leaked emails that apparently got out to the press as well. You know, there's a lot of things that Inter you know, he's right. They should be handling a lot better. So I think that's where he was kind of alluding to. And yeah, I think he must be. A lot of people were saying he was pointing the finger to Auxilio because he's the one of the ones that's been there longest, even before, you know, even since Spalletti was there. But I don't feel like he was pointing his finger to Auxilio. But yeah, his mind is an enigma. So only he knows what he was really trying to do there.
Yeah, and you know, Jerry, it's funny because you mentioned a little bit there that Conte actually impressed you with that rant backing up his players, because you've been someone, as long as we've been doing this pod going back to February, you have been very critical of Conte, and you've called him a lot of names. We've had a lot of fun at his expense, but I was really surprised that this seems to be something that won you over. So you, Jerry, seem to have a new respect for Conte.
Anytime you back up your players, that's the respect that I'll take any day. It's something that I've learned being a Lazio fan, and one thing I respect Simone Inzaghi so much about is that he takes ownership in where he's wrong, I find. I know that sometimes his rants after the game are similar to Conte, but at the end of the day, he will respect his players and will reward his players and stand up for them and like praise them. And then at the same time, he disciplines them, but he leaves it in closed doors in respect of his players. And I see that's the same with Conte, where he when there's something wrong, I don't really see Conte being that type of guy who lashes out at his players. He kind of keeps it closed doors. And if someone's having a bad game, maybe he'll say that, okay, maybe Eriksen will be addressed. Or I never really hear him like bash players, other than just saying last summer that Mauro Icardi was not going to be in his lineup, in his plans. He just didn't see any plans with him, any idea for him to be in the lineup. And he just went off the bat, didn't bash him, didn't say he was a bad person or anything like that. So I think Conte deep down is a team player that will defend his team in any way possible when he has to. And he's very outspoken. We know that he can be a big baby. He does. I think his downfall will always be that he always cries during a loss, or for the majority of the time. But at the end of the day, when you have the backing of your players and you will do anything to defend them, I think that really has to be taken into consideration. So I respect that, and I will take that from a manager any day.
I mean, if I'm going to give Conte a grade to this point, I go with a B that could turn into a B+, maybe even an A- if they win Europa League. For me, a couple of the big positives are, you know, he's clearly improved the quality of Inter's football. From Spalletti, there's no question about that. And I also think that part of Conte being so demanding has helped the club in terms of, you know, the good transfer windows that they've had, you know, last summer, January, and even so far this summer signing Hakimi. Yeah, I think Conte does bring some good in that he will push the directors maybe to make a few signings that they would otherwise try and pinch a few pennies. Like, I honestly don't know if Romelu Lukaku would be, well, I'm sure he wouldn't be here without Conte being here to begin with, but I think Conte even really had to nudge that signing over the finish line last summer, so I'm thankful to that. You know, on the negative side of things, you know, I'm personally not a fan of some of the fits that he's thrown, you know, to reporters after games. And, you know, I thought Inter should have done a little bit better in Champions League that they did. And some of the substitutions he's done this season have not been great. So I give him for now a B that could turn into a B+ or an A- if they can win the Europa League. I mean, Uncle Sharma, do you have a grade for Conte to this point? How you feel he's performed his first and hopefully not final season as Inter's manager?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to yours. I think B- for the pitch, and then off the pitch, maybe a D.
Yeah.
Because it's like two different managers. He's like Conte, you know, on the pitch. I think he's, when it comes to making an impact on a team, I think he's one of the best coaches you can get. And he's proven that. But he's just the way he handles the media, how easily he gets irritated, and how much he moans and cries is such a pain to like watch. I don't, because I always, even though Spalletti was a pain to watch in interviews because of the way he would speak in like philosophical terms and, you know, long ass interviews, but with Conte I just can't bear to watch the interviews after matches. He's just so he just cries all the time, especially if we lose. But as you said, you know, we've got a style of play now, which is really important to me. Like, I like to, you know, I really like to my team to have a style of play, and we definitely have that now. Whereas you could say we had one under Spalletti, but, you know, the cross, inshallah.
Oh, I hated really... I really hated that. I mean, while watching Candreva just put in cross after cross after, oh yeah. My God.
Yeah, Candreva and Perisic is just pelting the ball to Icardi. It's not really much of a style of play.
I like Candreva, course... man. Don't bash the guy, man. I like him. I actually don't mind.
Your legend.
No, I like him. Honestly, I've much preferred Candreva under Conte. I didn't really like the way that he was playing under Spalletti. And obviously, listen, Candreva, you know, he can only take you so far. I'm very glad that Hakimi is coming in. But I appreciate the fact that Candreva runs like a mule. He plays tough defensively. He outworks pretty much anyone on the opposing team. So I respect him for sure.
Yeah, and that's again where, you know, Conte deserves credit. You know, he's improved a lot of players like Candreva. You know, he was pretty much, you know, the, if you remember last year, like, I think he was probably the most hated Inter player. And now this year, you know, he's probably our most improved player this season. You know, Stefan De Vrij, he wasn't a bad player before, but, you know, for me, he's been our player this season. And that's also thanks to, you know, Conte, the way he's integrated Bastoni, you know, a 20, 21-year-old. You know, he gave him a little bit of time at the beginning, you know, really put him in the team around October, November. And then since then, he's been, you know, a revelation. You know, the way since he started, obviously afterwards, oh my God. He died. and, you know, the way that Lukaku, you know, he's had his best ever goal scoring season in his whole career. And the way that, you know, if you watch Lukaku play from the first few months to now is like, you know, day and light difference, the way he brings other people into play. And, you know, Lautaro Martinez as well, you know, he obviously had the big dip after January, but still the amount of work that guy puts in is very underrated. I think a lot of times he gets criticized a lot now, but I feel like he's still very important to this team. And but in terms of the things that he done badly, as you said, like the substitution, sometimes is a bit baffling why he waits till like the 75th, 80th minute to make the substitution. And as it always seems to be the same substitutions, he never like chucks in a wild card here and there, you know, like Agumen and Esposito, you know, I think feel like they deserve a few more minutes than they have got. And then the rotation is something that he's always struggled with, even in his past teams. Even if you ask Chelsea fans or Juve fans, it always feels like he always, especially at the beginning, you know, Brozovic got like zero rest at the beginning of the season. He was played every single time, every single minute. And I was crazy. I criticized him on my YouTube videos that, you know, Borja Valero is not the greatest player, but, you know, he's a serviceable player and he deserves a few more minutes to give Brozovic or Barella, you know, a little bit of rest. And then we saw Brozovic was like a zombie by the end of like November, December. Barella got an injury, since he got injured, and until he was forced to play Borja, he didn't play him. And then, you know, a few weeks ago, he came out and admitted that it was a mistake to not, you know, play Borja, or he didn't trust Borja at the beginning and that was a mistake. So, you know, that's still something he needs to improve on, the team rotations and managing the energies, because his football is so intense. You know, it's, you know, a bit similar to kind of Simeone or Klopp, you know, very intense football. The players have, even though we're the superior team for most of the matches we play, we outwork the teams, which usually is not the case. When you're the superior team, usually you make the other team work more. But under Conte, you have to leave, you know, that jersey has to be full of sweat. So, you know, all in all, as I said, good year, B- for me. And then, yeah, as you said, like, if we bring the Europa League trophy home, then it has to be A- at least.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was very well said. I mean, so Jerry, I go with a B that could become a B+ for Conte. Sharma, B- that could become a B+, but a D off the pitch. I mean, Jerry, if you can give a grade to Conte, what do you go with?
A+.
I love how he won you over. He won you over with a meltdown. What would you have given him?
No, I'm kidding. I want to see what you would say. I'll probably give him a B+, man. You know what? I was hard on him all season, but at the end of the day, Inter came back. They finished second place. I know that the point differential between Juve and Inter is it doesn't really tell the whole story how Juventus really won the season with what, 3 or 4 weeks, 3 games remaining. And I think that Conte overall has made this team much better. I was not a believer of them at the beginning of the year. And as the season progressed, they progressed. I think their biggest downfall was not being able to close matches out when they should have. Points against such as Bologna, Sassuolo. I'll even say against Lazio. Lazio were really fortunate to have taken points against them when Ciro Immobile was awarded a penalty shot, which shouldn't have been. Just a lot of points that either they should have earned or they lost because of bad luck. But at the end of the day, I think that's the only thing that's separating them from Juventus is if they can learn how to finish their opponents off and just seal it. Get the 3 wins, that the 3 points that you need. Score the goals when you have to. Even against Leverkusen, I think that they were really fortunate to maybe win 2-1 because they should have scored more goals in that game. And an opponent like, say, Sevilla or Manchester United, if they go to the finals, you can't get away with missed opportunities. You have to bury your chances. And as well, Conte has really made players better. Bastoni has looked really good in the back three. He has been one of their best defenders, maybe someone that they probably weren't even thinking about being this good throughout the whole year. I'm guessing when you have a guy like Stefan De Vrij, you got who else? You have Godin, who came in, cost him a lot of money and was expected to do much and has really struggled. And then you have Skriniar, who has not really looked good in a back three and is better for a back four. So
Godin was a free transfer, by the way.
Oh, his wages, no?
Yeah, his wages are higher.
Thank you. Same shit to me, man. Same shit to me. I'm sorry. If you like Rabiot and freaking Goldie, when you're spending $6.5 million or $10 million a season for players, it doesn't really matter the transfer. You're still paying so much in wages. And
Goldie's been a lot better lately too. Like he's looked really good in these Europa League games these last couple weeks.
He's been so disrespected by Inter fans.
Yeah, I agree. Well, on Europa League, I think that's a good segue. Inter in the Final Four. They have Shakhtar in their semifinal coming up on Monday. They're going to face whoever wins that game will face the winner of Manchester United and Sevilla. I'm feeling pretty good about Inter's chances. They've been playing some of their best football these past 4 matches, so it looks like they're peaking at the right time. Uncle Sharma, I'll ask you, what do you make of the Shakhtar match coming up on Monday, and how optimistic are you about Inter's chances to win this trophy?
Yeah, I still need to study Shakhtar, I need to do my preview video, but yeah, in general, I'm positive, since the beginning, it was announced there was going to be this mini tournament, you could tell. If you look on paper, Inter and Man United are the best teams on paper. They should be in the final. But as we know, football's not that simple. But in terms of the Shakhtar match, we're definitely favourites. Shakhtar, I know that they call them like the Brazil of the East because they have all these Brazilian players in their team. they have like some really good scouts out there and they always find these little gems that end up moving on usually. But they seem to have kept the team together mostly this time. And yeah, they should be interesting. They're quite dangerous on the counter-attack from what I've seen. But, we should have plenty, more than enough to beat Shakhtar. They're susceptible at the back. I've seen they concede goals quite a bit. And yeah, as you said, it seems like we're peaking at the right time. The injury to Sanchez is a bit of a concern. And Lukaku was a little bit limping in that match as well against Leverkusen. But it seems, you know, we've got this extra, we've got a whole week this time rather than just 3 or 4 days to recover. So that should be even better for us to get the energies back together. Sensi is back in training, full training. Hopefully, I would like to see him get like 5 or 10 minutes at least. I just want to see that guy on the pitch again. And yeah, like as you said, Godin's picking up form right at the right time. He's getting used to the formation. Finally, you know, he admitted in a interview after the Leverkusen match that it's taken him some time to get used to the new tactics, and quite rightly so. Is he's played his whole career pretty much on the back four. And quite a defensive system, you know, Uruguay internationally, they're very defensive as well. And under Simeone, we know what a masochist and a terrorist he is. So we saw yesterday, you know, that type of football that he's used to playing, you know, very low block, deep lying. Whereas now we're, our defensive line is so high, so aggressive. So it's very difficult for him to adapt, but he's adapted now. So I'm expecting at least, I would say, like a 2-1 win against Shakhtar.
You know, and I'm definitely going to be paying close attention to the other semifinal between Manchester United and Sevilla. And, you know, Jerry, I give you a big shout. You certainly, Jerry, you've been bullish on Sevilla throughout this tournament. You've been saying for the last couple of rounds, even going back, I think, to the round of 16, that they were your pick to win this entire tournament. I mean, I agree with Uncle Sharma that on paper, Inter and Manchester United are the two best teams left. But Sevilla has been in very good form. Manchester United, maybe not as much. I mean, Jerry, what are you still sticking with Sevilla to win the tournament? What's your outlook on the final four?
I'm not changing my pick. Sevilla is the pick to go. I just think they're the best team. The way they move the ball, the way they play, it's such a beautiful brand of football. And Lucas Ocampos has been their best player this season. This is a guy who came from Marseille, was very inconsistent. You saw moments of really brilliance and then moments of really bad, and his ego, he just couldn't get it together. And he comes to Sevilla, he plays under Lopetegui. Lopetegui has revitalized his career. He had a bad stint with Real Madrid, has really done well this year. Monchi brought him in, took the risk, has really paid off. There's just so many players that are just playing well. I thought Suso had a good game. I know that Michael Lisi called me out, and he thought that I may have been watching the wrong game. But for me, I think that Suso, I know I'm the first to like rip on Suso, but Suso has done really well to earn some playing time right now in the Europa League, and a backup keeper who made a good save on the penalty, but also a poor kick from Jimenez. And at the beginning of the game against Wolves, Traore really made it difficult. His speed was really hard to maintain, his physicality. And then all of a sudden, as the game war progressed, Sevilla started to take the game to Wolves. They became more possession, more attack-minded, more decisive, and their speed just became too much for Wolves to handle. And I think that a team like Manchester United might really struggle. They're going to really need to depend on Pogba and Bruno Fernandes. So I don't know how Manchester is going to come out in this game. But and I also remember, and credit to Joseph Fischetti from Forza Napoli, he said a good point that Sevilla really owns this tournament. They always come into this tournament always winning it or coming close to winning it. I think they've won 5 times, if I'm not mistaken. They've won the most of all of Europa Leagues in a while. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one, or somewhere near around there. But they just know how to win this tournament. And I think that even with Inter, they might struggle against a very quick, fast-paced Sevilla squad that is relentless and doesn't give up. And last point is that when I saw them, when the La Liga resumed back in, I believe, May or June, around May, they had a game against Barcelona. And I've said this many times, that game is the one game that really stood out to me, because when you are able to tie Barcelona, limit a team that's pretty deep, such as them, and keep it, I believe it was a 1-1 game. The final score was 0-0, but to earn a draw against a team like Barcelona speaks highly about what Sevilla can do. And they finished fourth in their standings as well. So it's been a very impressive season. And I just don't know how you can take down this team who has a lot of good pieces working together.
I'll tell you, as an Interista, what would be a really interesting scenario, and it's not to say that I'm rooting for all of this to happen, but imagine getting to the finals, playing Manchester United. So you have all the banter between the fans of United that say, oh, Lukaku is shit, he's terrible, you have all our rejects, and then Inter win Europa League. PSG and Icardi, they probably wouldn't score until they sub him off, but PSG wins Champions League, and then you get Inter versus Icardi in the European Super Cup. Now that that would be a lot of fun if it were to play out that way. But let's segue to transfers. It could be a very interesting and active transfer market for Inter, both when it comes to incoming and outgoing. And so a couple questions for you, Uncle Sharma, your opinions on a couple things. First, who do you think might leave? Like, because I'm a little bit afraid that Skriniar could be dealt either for relatively big money or maybe in this Ndombele swap. So who do you think might be heading out the door? And what do you think Inter's biggest needs are to fill for incoming transfers?
Yeah, I think you're right. It does seem like Skriniar is the one. I think either Skriniar or Brozovic. I feel like Brozovic has kind of reached like the end of a cycle at Inter. It seems like, you know, he's almost like reached a limit. You know, Spalletti saved him from, you know, he was pretty much on a plane to Sevilla at one point and then got him into that Regista position and he hasn't looked back since. But this season, especially when we play the 3-4-1-2 formation, he really seems like he has lost in that formation. Still performing at a decent level, but just not hitting real heights. And I think Conte feels like maybe he could get someone a bit more physical in there to replace him. And then with Skriniar, as we know, like he just has struggled to adapt to the rear the back formation. But, you know, I feel like he hasn't done as badly as people make out to be. You know, we still ended up being the best defense in the league, so he can't have been that bad. As people make him out to be, but just obviously not hitting those heights as previous years. So I think it's those two. And those two have still, like, you know, obviously Skriniar has really high value. Maybe not as high as it was last year or 2 years ago, but still, you know, 60 million plus at least. And Brozovic, I would say at least, you know, 30, 40 million. You know, in his peak years, he's 28 years old, so he still has good value. So those two are the ones I see leaving and to make funds for, you know, incoming. In terms of transfers that we need to, or priorities that I see in the team, is definitely, you know, the backup to Lukaku or the challenger, you know, a third or fourth striker, as you would call it. You know, that position that we really lacked in this year. You know, Lukaku's been forced to play almost every single match. And, you know, even at the beginning when he was still struggling with a few niggling injuries, he had to play. You know, it's good to just have a little competition in that position. You have a little someone that offers maybe a little bit something different. You know, Lukaku's improved his target man play, but having maybe another someone that's even better than Lukaku at the target man play, you know, like the mentioned Dzeko has been rumored, and you know those types of players that are physical, the Girouds of this world. So that's definitely a priority for me. Sanchez has been secured, so that's great. Yeah. So the backup to Lautaro, the challenger to Lautaro, is there. Then after that, depending on what we do with Brozovic, you know, Brozovic can't play every single match. You know, someone has to come in and give him some breathing space there as well. So a vice Brozovic, or if he goes, a Brozovic replacement. And then obviously left wing back, we've got the right wing back position sorted. Hakimi should be, you know, hopefully the D'Ambrosio curse is over now. Hakimi should be the definitive answer on that wing back position for many years to come now. So the left wing back position, you know, Ashley Young has done great since he's come in. He's been an absolute revelation since he's come. But obviously, you know, he's 34 years old. We can't expect him to keep up these levels. And we should, you know, get an upgrade on Biragi for sure. So, you know, that would be my priority, trying to get someone out there. My ideal name is someone called Filip Kostic from Eintracht Frankfurt. He's been putting up crazy numbers in the Bundesliga for two seasons now. He's athletic, he's strong, he's 27, he's in his peak years, he's got a great left foot, he takes free kicks. So for me, that would be my ideal signing. But I've seen that we link with like Emerson Palmieri. He's also decent. I quite like him, and Conte's worked with him in the past, so he would be a good fit. But hopefully, you know, we need Marina at Chelsea to give us a good deal, because she's
a hard negotiator, though. Unfortunately.
Yeah. but yeah, those are my priorities. But also, you know, the Ndombele thing, you know, I quite like that link. I don't like particularly the Skriniar Ndombele swap idea, but I like that we link with Ndombele, because I feel like we've lacked a ball carrying midfielder for a very long time in our team. You know, we still, you know, like to go towards our wing backs to, you know, cross it in a lot. And I think a ball carrying midfielder would add that threat from the middle. You know, Ndombele had the highest completion of dribbles in the whole of Premier League alongside Kovacic. So, you know, he would bring that extra level of, you know, threat from the middle rather than just from the wings. So I would like to see us link with more kind of those line-breaking, ball-carrying midfielders.
I'd love your take, because I know you watch football a different way than I do, and you break things down very analytically for a lot of your videos. I'd love your take on Sandro Tonali, who, you know, reports indicate, and I know that there are other teams that do want him, but reports indicate it seems like it's only a matter of time before Inter finalizes the deal for his purchase. They've agreed to personal terms. You know, it seems like it's getting close to an agreement with Brescia. It's been reported for some time. So he's created some debate among Interisti, and I think one of the debates is if he's going to cost you around 35, 40 million, would it be better, given that Inter is a club that is trying to win now, it's not necessarily a long-term project, would it be better to take that 35, 40 million and invest it in an older and more accomplished player, where Tonali is an ascending 20-year-old, would that be money better spent elsewhere? I don't think anyone thinks that he sucks or anything like that. Personally, I think Tonali can not only help now, but I also think that I think it'd be a great idea to lock up a player who I think is a couple years away from being world-class, and it's going to be a big part of the Azzurri. So personally, I'm all on board with signing Sandro Tonali this summer. Some Interisti aren't. What's your take on that situation?
Yeah, do you know what it is? I think it's because Brescia were, you know, especially when they've played Inter, Tonali really has not, you know, stood out. He's kind of had pretty bad matches when he's played Inter, in the home match or the away match in the first leg, and then in the return when we played them at San Siro, he was pretty much non-existent. So I think that's where some Inter fans were kind of like, is he really that good? But then, like, you know, he plays in a Brescia team that were, you know, they really stink. You know, this year they were pretty bad. So it's very hard to judge a player when he's playing with such bad players around him, and he's playing in such a, you know, important position in that defensive midfielder regista position, where, you know, he's got no one next to him. You know, what's he gonna do? Punt long balls to Torregrossa? You know, he doesn't really got much around him. So I think that's where the judgment kind of changed slowly. You know, there was a little big hype at the start of the season when Brescia had a decent start to the season and Tonali was assisting and scoring. You know, he scored that amazing free kick against Genoa. But the more I watch him, actually, the more I'm convinced that he's not a regista. I mean, he's been playing there and he can play there, but I really see him as more of a mezzala, like in the Barella role type, you know, going up and down, box to box. Because it doesn't seem like he's that comfortable, you know, receiving the ball from the centre backs. But, you know, obviously, as we said, he's so young, he could be improving that side of to his game. But he's actually really physical. You know, people compare him to Pirlo, but I think it's literally just because of his hair and his face, mm-hmm. and because he plays for Brescia. But there's not much really Pirlo-like about him. He's compared himself to Gattuso, and I see more of those qualities in him. He's more of a physical, combative player rather than a gliding, classy midfielder. But yeah, I'm on board the Tonali train. You know, you can't, Conte wants all these 30, you know, he wants the Arturo Vidal's of this world, the 32-year-olds, the 33-year-olds, but, you know, there's only so much you can listen to him. You know, if you give him every single player that he wants, we'll end up with a 35-year-old average squad. So, you know,
right. And you know, Conte is only going to be around for another year or two. So then Conte is going to walk away and leave us with a bunch of 40-year-olds. Like, that's how that would go down.
So, you know, you have to take a decision at one point that, you know, okay, we need to look at the future of the team as well. And so that's why I agree with you. I think we need to make sure that we lock down the future talents of the Italian team. You know, like, we've got Barella, we've got CNC. And yeah, like, I think that's going to be the future of the Italy midfield. You know, Zaniolo's there as well, of course. But if we've got Tonali, Barella, and Sensi, I think that's the future Italy midfield.
What do you think, Jerry? Because I know you said a couple choice words for Barella before we started recording. Do you think he's worth the hype he's getting?
After last game, yeah, he's. I thought he was the best player for Inter in their win against...
I'm sorry. I meant Tonali. Excuse me. I said the wrong... My apologies. I meant Tonali.
Oh, you got me excited, man. Sorry. Freaking...
I know you love Barella. I'm sorry. I meant Tonali. I don't know. Because when Sharma was talking about him being more the Barella role, the name started to mingle in my brain.
Tonali, you know what? For 35 million... I think it's not bad. It's a good deal. You're getting a player that has a lot of potential. He can read the game very well. He has good passing. I know that his defense is not the greatest. Something maybe he can work on, but he's still very young and has a lot of upside. And if you're able to develop him into the player that can be, where everybody's projecting him to be so elite, then I don't see why not. A guy like Conte could get the best out of Tonali. I personally think that, you know what, Juventus might be a different situation for Tonali now. I'm going to be honest, because you got Pirlo, and Pirlo was one of the best midfielders, and with his experience and his abilities, he may be able to make Tonali into a different type of player too, right? So it's very tough, because now you had shithead Maurizio Sarri at the beginning, and here's the situation. I see that Tonali now all of a sudden sees, hey, Sarri's out the door. I'm gonna reconsider maybe Juventus, because now you got Pirlo coming in. Let's hear what he has to say. Like, what is his vision? What does he plan on doing going forward? This is a guy who was one of the best midfielders. I was just saying, he can probably teach me a few things, make me into a better midfielder, and he would be a starting midfielder in that discussion.
You know, I was worried about that the last time we recorded, but if you believe Italian reports, they've said that Juve is not entering the race for him.
I don't buy anything. I make my own thought on this, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. All these media reports is all clickbait bullshit. Okay, let's be
well, I've got got a little breaking news, guys, that it happened now as we're recording this. And this guy, when Fabrizio Romano tweets something, it's not clickbait. So this is very interesting, and I want to get Sharma's take on this. Fabrizio just tweeted, Inter have agreed personal terms with Marash Kumbula. He's ready to sign a contract until June 2025. Talks on between Inter and Hellas Verona to find an agreement on the final fee. So, Sharma, there's a couple things to break down here. Number one, your thoughts on Kumbula. And number two, this sends a pretty loud message that Skriniar could be sold, right?
Definitely, yeah. That's pretty much almost a nail in the coffin, I would say, for Skriniar or someone in the back line, because... You know, numerically, we're fine there. So definitely it means that if he's coming in, then someone has to be going out. In terms of ability-wise, I've not really watched him. Like, I don't like commenting on players that I haven't watched too much. You know, I haven't watched much of Verona this season. But the only times I've watched him was against Inter. And he did look pretty good against Inter. But, you know, he's used to the three defender formation. So you can clearly see why Conte, or, you know, he's requested for a centre-back like that. So, and he's quite young. And, everyone tells me really good things about him. So, you know, 20, 25 million is very reasonable price. That's how much we paid for bloody Gagliardini. So, I'm happy with that, but yeah,
speaking of which, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to get Jerry involved in this conversation on two fronts, because A, Jerry Lazio had been linked heavily to Kumbula, and I know that you weren't sold on the idea because it seemed a little expensive and you had other transfer targets in mind. And Sharma brought up the name Gagliardini. He has been linked to Lazio. And Jerry, if I can help push that deal over the line, I will fly to Italy. I will rent a Fiat in Milano and drive Gagliardini from Milano to Rome myself, if it means getting this deal.
Contribute to that. We can do a GoFundMe for Inter fans on Twitter. I'm sure.
I will drive him to Rome myself.
Kumbula, I don't know, guys. Like, it's a lot of money for a player that has had one good season. Now, I'm pissed off because I'm gonna contradict myself. It is a lot of money, but I was hoping that Lazio would also sign him because we do need center backs, and it just reminds me how fucking cheap Lotito is. Pissed me off, but at the same time, I don't know if it's him being cheap or him not budging to spend the money where he doesn't believe that maybe Kumbula will not bring him back his return on his investment. Like, maybe
no, he's cheap.
No, and I absolutely agree with that, but I'm just curious in this situation here. You only see one good season with Hellas Verona, right? And Kumbula has shown that he can be a very good center back. He's strong in the back. He's very smart. He can read the game really well. But does he replicate the season again? Did he just have one good season and that was it? I don't know. Like, it's many questions, many big ifs, right? For a price tag like that. And with Lazio, they don't have a budget as Inter does. That's one thing. So Inter is able to spend this kind of money compared to Lazio. So they need to be more smarter how they invest. So maybe they have another player in mind that they think that they can get an $18 million player somewhere else that may produce even better or might be better in their terms or offer what they want. But I don't know what with Tare and Lotito, you don't know what goes behind closed doors. The end of the day. You never know what that team keeps it tight. That's why I'm laughing about this whole David Silva thing and his whole the other guy from Real Madrid, Mayoral, he's a forward, but I find it hard for him to come in now.
Yeah, the other Borja. There could be two Borjas in Serie A.
I find it hard to believe because he was supposed to be Caicedo's replacement, but now you got Mariki, the guy from Fenerbahce, coming over. So if you have him that you spent $18 million for, does it defeat the purpose that you need that forward from Real Madrid that is on loan right now? So like, I see those kind of things, and maybe there's a reason why that deal might not happen anymore. But with Lazio, I still think they're gonna sign a center back. I don't know. Apparently today there are reports that they have just agreed a deal with Mohamed Fares from Spal. I'm very shocked that Lotito has budged to spend $9 million plus bonuses for him. Good signing, just like how we signed Manuel Lazzari last season. And that's how Lazio does signings. They get these players that are not expensive, but also mid-range money that they have to spend and will work out well for Lazio. So I think that it's unfortunate that we didn't sign Kumbula. We'll see who else is on their radar. Well,
and it may not be over yet. Personal terms agreed to. They still have to deal with Verona. Maybe this wakes up Lotito and he makes an incredible offer. Maybe.
I don't know. I trust Fabrizio Romano. If it was some other outlet, then yeah. Like, I'm still waiting to see what he's going to say about David Silva. So he hasn't said anything. So my guess is if he or DiMarzio say something, then I'll believe it. But when outlets and other sources, I love when they say other sources. Who the hell is other sources?
Like, right. I mean, it could be anybody. It could be me. I might be the source.
Yeah, my grandmother. Don't worry. My grandmother is 90. Don't worry. Nonna. She's reporting what these fucking guys are going to be eating tonight. Linguine and freaking spaghetti. Don't worry. That's what they're going to be reporting. But as for Gagliardini, guys, I had no connection with Claudio Lotito. Okay, let's get this on. Let's get this straight.
Yeah, Sean, I don't know if you saw me tweet about this.
Yes.
But for the last couple of weeks on this pod, every time I rip Gagliardini, Jerry comes on and says, I watch him. I really like him. I think he's a good player. You're unfair to him. And then after these last couple of pods, when Jerry has been praising Gagliardini, somewhere out of nowhere, we see Lazio linked to Gagliardini. Like, that was never even talked about until it was either last night or this morning. So I think Jerry made the call.
Yeah, if you like him so much, Jerry, you know, Milinkovic, Savic, Gagliardini swap, I think that makes sense to me.
Yeah. But I don't, again, then I see this. I like Gagliardini. I think he's a good sub player. Can really play against the bottom feeders. Decent player. He works hard. I don't think he's outright shit. But when you hear that, could try to pick him up for 15 million. No, it's not going to happen, guys. Let's just drop this right now. 15 million is a good player you can buy. You know what I mean? I don't see Lazio spending 14 million for Gagliardini. They might as well just buy Kumbula and put the extra 10 million in. Like, makes no sense to me, but I just don't see that happening. I just don't see it. That's it. I got nothing else to say to that.
I want to close out on one thing. I want Sharma's take on this. You know, Jerry and I have both spoken, said our piece on it in recent episodes. Although I think there is one more thing that Jerry and I can weigh in before we call it an episode here. But Uncle Sharma, we have, of course, haven't spoken to you since the shocking Pirlo appointment at Juventus. Now, I know the upside of this. They're hoping that he can be the next Zinedine Zidane, and maybe at some point he can be. But Zidane, when he was first appointed at Real Madrid, like, had coaching experience, right, where Pirlo literally has none. He's still working on his certifications. I mean, he was the Juve under 23 coach for 8 days, hadn't actually coached a game before this appointment. Were you shocked by this, and do you think it can work out for Pirlo quickly, or will it take time?
Yeah, shocked is an understatement. I remember when the Hakimi signed, I had the similar type of face when I saw the Twitter post of, like, official Andrea Pirlo head coach. Is like, wow, this is such an un-Juve move. And yeah, as you said, like, I don't really get the comparisons to, like, Zidane or Guardiola, because those guys put in work before getting the jobs. And yeah, Pirlo still has to pass his, I think he has to do his final thesis for the Coverciano course. So
can you imagine if he fails? Like, he's allowed to start coaching before the final thesis. So can you imagine if, like, he starts coaching in September and then, like, late in the month, oh, by the way, he failed his thesis.
Yeah, it's like, you know, well, if he fails, and apparently, like, I think he finishes in October, so he in the Champions League matches, he has to have someone next to him that has passed the test, I think. So he's not allowed to be on the bench on his own. Oh, so wow. that's how bad it is. So yeah, I'm so shocked, and I think that, you know, that changes things up for the Scudetto race for sure. The Juve are not clear favorites to me.
Well, and real quick, I want to go around the table, because there are a lot of Juve-related reports in this regard. And again, this is Italian media stuff. Who knows what to believe? But Jerry, let me start with you. Is there seems to be now a thinking that Dybala and Ronaldo will not both be back this coming year. I think for me, the idea of selling Dybala is lunacy. I know they almost did it last summer, but I think it was proven to be a huge mistake that they were even thinking about it. He's under 30. He loves Juventus, whereas Ronaldo is 35, and he's more expensive with the wages. I mean, Jerry, do you think both of them come back this coming season? And if it's one or the other, who's out, who's in?
If one has to go out, I think it's Ronaldo, personally. And that will free up a lot of money, and they'll be able to do what they normally did in the past seasons, where they didn't blow their money on one player, and they built a team that works together. So I think he's the odd man out. That's just my opinion. I think a guy like Dybala, who's what, 26 years old, still has many good seasons ahead of him. You can really build around him and make him your focal point to start from. And they have a lot of good pieces that are there, but I if I had to choose one or the other, I think it's Ronaldo. The only problem is that are you able to recuperate and get as much of the money back that you spend for him in the final 2 years? So
yeah, no, I think you would just be happy to get rid of the wages. Like you can't expect a huge transfer fee at this point.
I agree, and I get that you can make 90 to 100 million on Dybala, but who's gonna spend that personally in the economic times that they're in right now? So, and I guess you could say the same thing about Ronaldo as well. But I think that a team that wants to win, especially a team like PSG, let's just say that they don't win Champions League, I can see PSG coming knocking on the door and saying, how much do you want for Ronaldo? Because we want Ronaldo and we're going to win now. And they know that in his 2-year window that they can probably do it with him.
What do you think, Uncle Sharma? Are you buying that one of them could be out this summer? And if so, who?
I don't know. It's such a short transfer window this year. It's very difficult because usually these transfers take weeks and weeks of, you know, negotiations and a lot of numbers behind, a lot of accountants involved in these kind of deals. So I don't see, you know, such a big transfers happening, especially with the reduced money from the COVID situation, you know, the financial situation. And PSG are still in the Champions League, and how long, you know, depends how long they're going to be there. And when are they going to get time to start negotiations? You know, it's, I don't see it happening, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you. We'll end on that note. Huge thank you to Uncle Sharma, and you should check out and subscribe to his YouTube channel. Does a great job breaking everything down. Where can everybody find you? Where do they find the channel? Where do they find you on social media?
Yeah, if you go on YouTube and type Uncle Sharma, hopefully my video should pop up there, or you'll see videos of Indian cricketers or singers.
I'm fine either way, to be honest.
Yeah, I reached 500 subscribers, so thank you everyone to subscribed. Hopefully, yeah, on my way to 1,000. And on Twitter, you can find me at rsharms with 2 Z's at the end, because I'm cool like that.
Love it. Well, listen, man, tremendous stuff as always. We love having you on, and of course, Jerry bringing the flavor as well. You can follow him at jmancini8. You can follow me at Alex Dono. You can follow the show at CalcioCon Pod. And if you enjoy what you hear, and even if you don't, leave us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate it. And if you can, you know, the 5-star rating takes a second just to hit the 5 stars, 1 second to click that. If you can take another, you know, 30 seconds or so to leave us a nice review, we appreciate that as well. We'll talk to everyone next time on another episode of the Calcio Connection Podcast. Ciao.
Ciao.